Well, another story Tom Bowman reported on recently is that U.S. troops have been training for a possible mission to secure chemical agents in Syria if the Assad regime falls. The training took place back in March at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. The 82nd Airborne Division and chemical experts from the 20th Support Command conducted a 9-day exercise where paratroopers practiced with protective gear and chemical detectors as they surrounded buildings that contained mock chemical agents. U.S. Central Command told Bowman at the time that it hasn't ordered any unit to take on such a mission, but that the 82nd Airborne has a brigade ready to deploy within 18 hours. Khalif Sepp has an inside view of military chemical weapons training. He's a senior lecturer in defense analysis at the U.S. Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, California. He's also a former Army Special Forces officer. He joins us from the studios of KAZU. Khalif Sepp, welcome.
Thank you, Magna.
So you've been through this training. That's the key thing. You're an expert in both the offensive and defensive use of chemical weapons. What exactly is involved when a group like the 82nd Airborne undertakes the training? What do soldiers experience?
Well, they go through both individual and equipment training for principally for protection through use of equipment like gas, what are called gas masks, protective masks in military parlance, and protective suits, and then also how to use vehicles and how to protect them and to decontaminate them if they enemy chemical weapons are used against them. This is a return to the this very high, very intense level of training that the U.S. Services were very good at during the Cold War, during when there was a very strong threat that, from the Soviet Union for use of chemical weapons, but fell off after the beginning of the Iran and Iraq. After the beginning of the Iraq War. When there was essentially no training being done. But in the last several months, units all over the services have been preparing again for chemical warfare.
Now, preparing again in light of the crisis in Syria, or just because the Defense Department thinks that it's important for the military to be trained in the defensive aspects of chemical weapons, regardless of where soldiers might get deployed?
You've just answered the question. It's both. As the military is turning away from counterinsurgency, even though chemical weapons were forms of chemical weapons were used in the Iraq War, insurgents would put chlorine into some of the roadside bombs, the IEDs, which is its own, which is a a chemical weapon when and used that way. But there are so many nations like North Korea that have chemical weapons that as the foreign forces turn back to preparation for these other kinds of combat, chemical weapons defense training is moved to the forefront again.
Now, since you've been through the training, I wonder if you can take us into a little bit more detail about things that soldiers might get educated on. Like you mentioned decontamination techniques. What does that involve? I mean, because the chemical agent itself could be a number of things. Its dispersal method could be a number of things. What do soldiers learn how to do in coping with that?
Well, Ian, you've just talked about two fundamental kinds of deployment in with lethal weapons, and if there are non-persistent, which are often tactically very useful because after the initial effect, they disperse very quickly. So, your forces that use those kind of weapons can then move into that area and not be affected themselves. But the much more serious kind is persistent agents, and they have an oil base to them and can persist for days or weeks if they land on equipment or on vegetation or soils. The suits that the soldiers would wear protect against that in some measure. But there are in the decontamination units that American military chemical organizations have, there are different kinds of washes and wipes that can and sprays that can counteract these persistent chemicals.
Different agents behave differently, as we've been discussing. I mean, for example, I suppose everyone who doesn't have a lot of experience of knowledge of chemical agents is only coming up to speed on it now. But correct me if I'm wrong, but oftentimes some of the gases that are used, they're heavier than air, so they might fall down to Earth. So you don't maybe even just in the way the unit operates in a particular building or space, they don't want to be close to the ground floor or lying down in a basement if they can help it.
Well, this is where you're exactly right about how some of these agents work, and that's why employment is so of these weapons is so dependent on weather conditions and the environment that it's used in. Now, exactly as you described, if these are employed in an urban area versus open desert or in a forest, there's very, very different effects. If it's very cold, the weapon itself is degraded because it might fail to vaporize. If it's extremely hot, it could evaporate very, very quickly and not have a particular effect. It's actually difficult to get the concentration. You actually have to pretty much saturate an area to get the levels of impairment or lethality to have a real military effect on a target. Mm. The way this is simulated for the Americans has been that when they wear their complete suits with the masks and the oversuits, they're in the field like the 82nd Airborne is doing. They're often just covered with pepper spray or a powder from the NATO designation is CS, but it's tear gas, but in its powdered form. The Soviets were very serious about this. They had areas in Russia that were contaminated with nerve agent, which was lethal, and the units that would suit up and go into them had dogs that they brought with them so the soldiers could see the dogs die, but know that their suits were protecting them.
Kalev Sepp is a senior lecturer in defense analysis at the U.S. Naval Postgraduate School in Monterey, also a former Army Special Forces officer. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Funding for Here and Now comes from GEICO, protecting drivers and their families with insurance coverage for over 75 years. More at geico.com or 1-800-947-AUTO.